It's Phoenix, you know, it's supposed to be hot. You can't get around God's plan, you know?
This is my fellow Phoenician Mario Moreno, who knows the heat as well as anyone. I found him doing yard work last month in front of his South Phoenix home, wearing a tank top and sweating under the late October sun.
I've been living in this house for 45 years.
Have you noticed the heat get any worse, though? I mean, because it has gotten hotter.
Well, you know, it stays hotter for longer.
Longtime residents like Moreno and me often dismiss the heat as a normal part of life in the desert. But lately, it has been really, really hot. Temperatures soared past 100 degrees on 145 different days last year. That was a record. A record number of people also died in that heat. So with the world's attention on the climate conference in Scotland, I wanted to see what the stakes were like closer to home, literally at the street level. The road outside Moreno's house was recently repaved with a cooler, more reflective surface. The blacktop is now gray.
I don't think this is enough to make a difference.
A band-aid.
Yeah. You know, it's a band-aid on a broken leg. There's so much asphalt, so much building. They plowed under all the cotton fields, the alfalfa fields, and people are moving in here. Well, the heat's going to go up.
The city believes these roads might help. They're being tested in a few neighborhoods, and the surface is 10 to 12 degrees cooler than traditional asphalt. It's part of a much bigger plan to adapt to an even hotter future. And this is the person in charge of pulling it off.
We could wind up with a city of the future that is cooler than the one we have today, even as the entire planet warms.
Dave Hondula was just hired as the city's first ever heat mitigation officer, a sign of how serious the problem has become. Hondula says the idea is to rethink the way Phoenix is built, make rooftops and roads more reflective, build shade structures, and plant thousands and thousands of new trees every year.
We have a lot of reason to be optimistic if deployment can happen at large scale.
The task is immense. Daytime temperatures have gone up a few degrees since 1950, when the population started booming. But Hondula says the real problem is at night. All the asphalt and concrete in the sprawling city hang on to the heat long after the sun goes down. The effect is known as the urban heat island. Hondula told me about it not far from Mario Moreno's front yard.
Depending on when we go back in the record, we're talking about a 7, 8, 9 degree Fahrenheit increase in average summer nighttime temperatures. And that's what residents tell us they really feel. They notice as they're out in their communities. If we find anybody who's lived in the Phoenix area for any length of time, they'll tell us, I remember how much cooler the nights used to be.
Well, in fact, I grew up in this city. You're right, it's always been hot. But if you look at recent years, I think it was last year, 110 degrees 53 days last summer, which that's remarkable. That's historic.
Yeah, last year, summer 2020, was a glimpse into the future. What we saw in 2020 is expected to come our way. Exactly when? Will it be 2040, 2050, 2070, 2080? That depends on decisions that will be made at the COP meeting and in other global climate negotiations, as well as what we do here locally with respect to urbanization. But 2020 shows us the type of weather we need to be prepared for.
What are the projections? Can you get specific at all?
On the low end, we're looking at 3-4 degrees Fahrenheit warmer by the end of the century. At the high end of that scenario, our hottest days, the days that are 115 right now, 116, those could be 8, 9, 10 degrees Fahrenheit hotter.
The context there is that it's incredibly dangerous for the heat to get that high. How would you describe the danger of that heat in this city?
We know all across the United States, heat is either the deadliest or second deadliest weather-related hazard. Here in Maricopa County, unfortunately, in each of the last 5 years, we've set records for the number of people that have died from heat, outpacing population growth. The risk of heat-related death increases almost exponentially as a function of temperature. A day that's 10 degrees hotter isn't just a little bit more dangerous, it's a lot more dangerous.
When you watched those records recently, the heat death records, how alarming was that for you as someone who watches this?
It has been quite alarming. When we set records before 2020, we were setting them by a very marginal amount, maybe 1/10 of a degree hotter for the June summer temperature. And that shouldn't lead to an increase in heat-related deaths by the margins we were seeing. So what shocked us was we look at the weather records and we wouldn't expect there to be any or many more heat-related deaths than there were in previous years. But we see those numbers moving up, which tells us that there are other pieces to the story. 2020, of course, we had the intersection with COVID, and it was really hot. So not as surprised to see the numbers really spike in 2020. But I think the same story is true, that had we done a better job with basic social service programs in 2020, those numbers could have been kept down, even with the heat.
Now, there's a reason we just heard a car go by. There's a reason that we're standing on this street in South Phoenix, because you're trying to get at some of the solutions to this problem. Tell me about this neighborhood where we are now, because I understand that it's hotter here even than in other places across the city.
We're in the neighborhood that might be called the Lindo Park, Rosalie Park neighborhood in South Phoenix. And most importantly, why we're here, this is a neighborhood where residents have come together to tell the city, to tell the county health department that they're looking for more when it comes to keeping the neighborhood cool.
Because they know it's a problem.
They know it's a problem. We don't need a PhD to come in and tell residents here that it's hot and the heat is a challenge in their life. They're the expert. We also do know, when we look at, for example, satellite measurements of the ground temperature, in this part of the city, those ground temperatures are higher than in other places.
So let's talk about why that might be. I mean, we know across the southwestern United States that some neighborhoods are just hotter than others. They're often, or almost always, poorer neighborhoods. One of the reasons why is because there's not as much tree cover. Now, we're standing in shade right now, but I guess that's a rarity in this neighborhood.
Yeah, we're enjoying some very nice shade at the moment, in fact. But as we look up and down this particular street that we're on, there are very few places where we could be standing. As we look, you know, probably a quarter mile to our west and a quarter mile to our east, we've kind of found the one spot where we could be standing in the shade comfortably on this late October
day. Exactly. I think that's an important point. It's almost November. We need the shade to be comfortable.
Absolutely. What we would also notice if we left, so we're on a residential street right now, but if we moved out to one of our major arterial streets, we would see tree canopy really go down. And if we looked for places to plant trees, we'd start to scratch our head a bit. And infrastructure constraints are a real obstacle that we're going to need to invest serious money in overcoming if we want to increase tree canopy in all parts of the city.
What do you mean? I mean, is that because there's just too much asphalt around here? There's no dirt to put the trees in?
Yeah, if we were to walk a couple streets over, we'd find a storefront that's really close to the front of its lot, immediately up against the sidewalk, which is immediately up against the street. There's no mulch bed, there's no median in the street, there are no opportunities where the city would own the land to be able to plant trees there. The physical space is not there for tree planting in a lot of parts of the city that, unfortunately, are those parts of the city that could benefit from it the most.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm realizing as I talk to you is that these solutions are really mitigation. They're not solving the core problem, which is carbon emissions warming the atmosphere, which are making this desert city more and more inhospitable. As someone who spends so much of their time thinking about this, what keeps you up at night as you consider the job ahead?
I mean, first and foremost, we have a lot of people who are suffering the worst possible outcome from heat right now. 191 heat-related deaths in Phoenix in 2020. Numbers are still being tabulated for 2021. We need to find ways to get those people out of harm's way now. I appreciate the importance of the global conversation around emissions, but we've got hundreds of people who we need to put a water bottle in their hands, get them into shelter, be sure that their air conditioning gets repaired in a timely manner. We're not doing as good of a job with that right now as we could be, and the numbers have been moving in the wrong direction. And then the other side of the story is thinking about the scale of investment that will be required to cool the city. We're going to need a lot of trees. We're going to need a lot of strategies like cool pavement to be deployed. The city has made a larger budget commitment than it previously has to these topics. But if we're serious about large-scale deployment, that's going to call for many more resources than we've planned for.
But where will those resources come from? And is there enough time to solve a problem that is already showing signs of boiling over? My children live in this city, and I often wonder about their future here, if there will come a time when living in Phoenix just becomes impossible. Think about it. Where would you go if the heat keeps soaring and the water runs dry?